When singer and actor Isaac Hayes announced his decision to leave the popular cartoon show South Park less than 2 weeks ago, folks wondered what would happen to his character named Chef. Well, the show's writers resolved their dilemma on last night's episode. Chef was hit by lightning, impaled, shot, mauled by a mountain lion, and then by a grizzly bear.
We're all here today because Chef has been such an important part of our lives. A lot of us don't agree with the choices Chef has made in the past few days. Some of us feel hurt and confused that he seemed to turn his back on us. But we can't let the events of the last week take away the memories of how much Chef made us smile. I'm gonna remember Chef as the jolly old guy who always broke into song. I'm gonna remember Chef as the guy who gave us advice to live by.
Most South Park fans are less upset by the death of a beloved character than by Comedy Central's decision to pull a rerun of an earlier episode of South Park that lampooned Scientology in general and Tom Cruise in particular. They claim the network was strong-armed into self-censorship, a charge that's also come up this week when another network, the WB, announced plans to sanitize one of its new shows for fear of fines from the Federal Communications Commission. If you have questions about the cartoon controversy, the FCC, and self-censorship, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And joining us in the studio is David Folkenflik, NPR media correspondent. Nice to have you back on the program, David.
Good to be here.
Do we know why Comedy Central decided not to replay that episode centering on Tom Cruise?
Well, Comedy Central said that it was simply that they had decided to run two sort of favorite episodes involving the character of Chef, that these were episodes that truly captured what he had been to the series, and therefore these were the right ones to run. There was a heck of a lot of blog speculation and fans who said, hey, is this a question of simply bowing to concerns about Scientology? You know, sort of the unwritten ironclad law of Hollywood is you don't mess with the Church of Scientology. And certainly representatives of Mr. Hayes put out statements saying that he was finally had enough with the question of mocking his church. He was himself a Scientologist.
Mm-hmm.
And that he took umbrage at that and couldn't participate in good conscience anymore.
Yet there's a raft of quotations from Isaac Hayes at any other time in the past saying, gee, what a wonderful show. They no holds barred. They make fun of everybody.
Well, I mean, if you're worried about observing niceties of protocol, decorum, this is not the show for you as either a viewer or a participant. I mean, my goodness, they went after everybody. And if you think that, you know, Trey Parker and Matt Stone are not going to do that, they're going to leave anybody untouched, mm-hmm. You're just wrong.
Yeah, that Isaac Hayes must have been shocked to hear that satire was going on.
Well, I mean, obviously, anybody has the right to decide not to participate any further, even in something they're involved with. But this is a show all about puncturing everything.
Interesting that many, again, talking about the blogs, many of the fans of the show said they would boycott Tom Cruise's new movie, Mission Impossible 3, which comes out, in a couple of weeks. And until Comedy Central reran the South Park episode in question, this would normally seem to be an empty threat. But somebody did notice that the demographic of the people who watch South Park is exactly the demographic that MI3 is looking for.
And it's worth pointing out that the studios for MI3 is Paramount, that the channel for South Park is Comedy Central. Both of them are owned by the entertainment media conglomerate Viacom. And, you know, it's never a mistake to bet on the idea that corporate influences reach past, you know, certain company borders. That is, that if they're sister corporations, they may do things in concert. At the same time, Tom Cruise has out and out denied that he had anything to do with the fact that they dropped a certain kind of anti-Scientology episode. He himself, obviously, one of the most famous Scientologists of all.
We'll have more on that, certainly if people want to call in on it, 800-989-8255. But I wanted to ask you about another example of, this is admitted self-censorship. The WB said that it would, for fear of fines from the FCC, re-edit some scenes in an upcoming show called The Bedford Diaries over the objections of the program's creator.
That's right. The program's creator is a guy named Tom Fontana. Listeners may remember him from NBC's gritty Baltimore police show, Homicide. He was one of the major producers on that. He also did an even edgier show called Oz about prison life for HBO for a time there. He was asked by the WB to delete parts of two scenes, one of which showed two young college women kissing on on a dare in a bar, mm-hmm. the other apparently involving a woman removing her jeans. He said he wouldn't do it. The network's own standards officials went and did it after him with his acquiescence. He said he understood they felt they had to do that after the decision earlier this month by the FCC to levy nearly $4 million in fines over a series of complaints about indecency. And the network said up front, look, after these rulings earlier this month, we feel we have to do this. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. The word censorship itself implies the government is coming down and doing this. In this case, that's not the what happened. The channel itself, the WB, decided it wouldn't do this. Mr. Fontana clearly feels this impinges on his artistic expression. But you can make a counter case. That is that there are many people in America who are concerned about what kinds of things come over broadcast television. Mm-hmm. The WB is a free station. It's sort of a mini network that's going to be merged into another one later this year. And there's all kinds of edgier fare available to people. If they want to watch basic cable, you know, channels like FX offer awfully gritty shows like The Shield and Nip Tuck about plastic surgeons and their foibles. You can get premium channels like HBO, Showtime, the movie channel that show extremely edgy and sexually charged content. And you can get pay-per-view where almost anything goes. Online, you can get pretty much anything you're willing to search for. So it's an interesting time in that things are available to people. It's not as though the fact that this isn't available on free television means you can't get it. It means that it's not available on these extremely broadcasting as opposed to niche outlets.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things presumably the FCC was trying to encourage in levying those stiff fines against CBS and various other outlets was to get broadcast networks to be more careful about this, and that's exactly what the WB is doing.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt. Kevin Martin, who's been there just for a relatively short stretch as chairman of the FCC, has made it an explicit aim that he's going to respond in a fairly quick, relatively quick manner to complaints about indecency, and that he intends to make this sort of a signature issue for him. This does have sort of the effect. Mr. Fontana, the producer, used the phrase chilling, which invokes questions of free speech.
Sure.
It does tend to affect how stations want to go about doing what they're doing. It does tend to I think, affect the climate in which broadcast channels will operate. You know, it is worth noting the fines that we're talking about, maybe $4 million, is pretty much a fraction of a speck of a mite of dust on something like the Viacom company. The WB is owned jointly by Time Warner and the Tribune Company. These are major multi-billion-dollar enterprises. For them, it's not that much money. But it is sort of a warning sign that this is an issue. Hmm. One thing I will mention, like, for example, for rappers, when they were people would bleep them out on radio and there'd be a debate about this, it tended to help them in terms of giving them some publicity. This may create some heat over some of these shows which are seen as racy.
Well, one thing the WB is doing is saying the unedited version is going to be available to viewers on its website. Is that a plus in saying, if you want to see something really edgy, you've got to go to the web? Or is it, they had to take a risk there, don't they?
Well, certainly, as they seek new kinds of viewers and consumers online, I think it can only drive people to that website when they say the things that we couldn't show you here on television. And, in a multimedia world, it may be that you're able to see different kinds of different versions of television shows through, podcasted or downloadable versions.
Let's get some listeners in on the conversation, and we'll go to Joan. Joan's calling us from Milwaukee.
Hi.
Hi.
I heard sometime in the last couple of weeks on a Wisconsin public radio program that there are some fines pending even for public television, something on a documentary on the blues.
Yes, there were.
That's correct.
Part of that set of fines against.
I'd like to know who's being fined on public television, because I'll raise Cain about that.
David Falkenflew?
I don't have the names in front of me, but there was indeed a documentary distributed by PBS and run on public television shows in which one of the jazz greats and performers talked, and he used a series of vulgarities sort of in an enthusiastic way to talk about it. The producers made the decision to sort of air the comments without bleeping or without deletion. They mm-hmm. were audible. It was done during regular programming time and prime time, and the FCC decided that this was that this was indecent and that it shouldn't be allowed. They were in fact fined for this. This was one of the episodes in the recent fines that drew, in some ways, the most outrage from certain kinds of artistic and free speech advocates.
And the fines would be levied against the television station rather than PBS, the license holder of whichever television station somebody complained about.
That's correct. And in fact, that's the way in which sometimes seemingly relatively small amounts can matter, particularly for smaller stations, because it can make them wary of being able to meet budgets if they're going to get hit. Sometimes stations have been fined for running reruns of shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can get hit more than once for this sort of thing.
Yeah, in fact, it was the rerun of a Without a Trace episode, which got CBS into trouble. And one other thing, I think fines are still pending. We're expecting announcements, I guess, any day now about fines for radio stations.
I think that's right.
Yeah. Joan, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, appreciate it. Let's turn now to Jackie. Jackie's with us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hi.
I was
wondering, what is the difference between the whole Larry Flint Supreme Court ruling and this? I mean, isn't freedom of speech somewhat acceptable anymore? Are we being coattailed into believing whatever the FCC tells us? This mm-hmm. is a pay channel. It's not like it's accessible to everybody.
No, not necessarily. And, of course, Larry Flint published Hustler magazine, which is a print publication and somewhat different. But go ahead, David Folkenflik.
Well, a print publication and a pornographic one. It's a very interesting question about free speech and the public airwaves. If you think about the FCC, it was founded sort of to regulate how the airwaves were handled. It's considered a public good. And getting one of these licenses is sort of tantamount, particularly for the for-profit sector, to print money. And so in exchange, you sort of agree to certain things. There are restrictions over what kinds of material you can broadcast at certain times of day. As there's been sort of the evolution and maturity of the broadcast world and radio and television, there have been arguments that say, hey, why is it that a television station doing news should have any less freedom of speech, any less of the embodiment of the principles of the First Amendment than a newspaper? And that's created some very interesting tensions. And as you think about it, why should it be only news? Why isn't it entertainment? Why should there be more protection for a play on Broadway than for something done at 10 o'clock at night?
And the answer many people would give is that, in fact, these television programs come into your home while you have to buy Hustler magazine or the New York Times, for that matter.
Or go to a play.
Yes.
I mean, and this is a tension in terms of how you conceive of what a broadcast is.
Jackie, thanks very much.
Thank you.
We're talking with NPR's David Folkenflik about controversies at Comedy Central, and the WB. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Shane on the line. Shane's with us from Nashville.
Yes, I was just wondering if there were any definitions by the FCC so that they know when they're making these shows that they are going to get fined. Is there any set rules, or is it just arbitrary?
David?
Well, I don't have the chapter and verse in front of me, and you can go to FCC.gov, which is the agency's formal website, where they offer a certain sort of guidelines for what they're doing. And a lot of times it's based on past decisions. I mean, one of the things the FCC doesn't do is tell you ahead of time whether or not something's going to be okay. You kind of lawyers look to interpret as they do for Supreme Court decisions in the legal arena. You know, lawyers for media broadcasters look for previous decisions and try to tease out, okay, is this word going to be a problem? Is this action going to be a problem? I think we now safely can conclude that if you bear a breast at the halftime of a Super Bowl,
you're going to be in trouble.
You're out of luck.
Yeah.
And this is the way in which they tease it out. They look through, many of these past rulings.
Thanks, Shane. Let's talk to Stephanie. Stephanie with us from Granville, Ohio.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We have not had cable in our home for 6 years because we have children, and years ago decided that the content was just too sexually explicit on normal TV shows. And at first I thought we were kind of weird and people would think we were crazy, and I've been surprised how many people I have met who tell me the same thing, of different religious faiths, not religious people, just they think TV is bad for their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And this summer we bought a house that has an antenna, and we were like, yay, we can watch PBS. But as a consequence, we have the three networks, and we have once again been shocked and disgusted at the things that are just on the network television. And whenever I bring it up to a lot of people, they act like there's nothing you can do. But the fact that the FCC is actually doing something gives me hope. And I would ask your guest, is there hope? Is it worth writing a letter or sending an email saying, hey, I don't want this stuff coming into my house? affecting my children that needs to be cleaned up.
David?
Who should I contact?
David?
You know, I think the FCC welcomes individual complaints about specific shows shown on specific stations. I think they kind of need something specific to react to. But that it sounds to me as though they are responsive or trying to be responsive to that. A lot of the fines that they've levied have been in reaction to sort of organized protests. There are a number of particularly culturally conservative groups that have geared up and sort of, you know, the complaints have come pouring in about very specific episodes, and that seems to have had some effect. But, you know, individual listeners at times or viewers, excuse me, at times can also trigger that. You know, again, they want you to define it. There are certain ways in which they define obscenity, certain ways in which they define indecency, certain ways in which they interpret statutes that have been written to guide them on that. You know, you're welcome to make your complaints to them. That's where it gets done.
In terms of a broader statement, Stephanie, you might want to try to write to your member of Congress. Congress, of course, tells the FCC or can tell the FCC to some degree what to do.
Yes, and not to sound apathetic, just hopeless. I'm not extremely confident in politicians doing much effectively.
You're not alone in that either, I don't think, Stephanie.
Well, I thank you very much.
Appreciate the phone call.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if we can go to Daryl. Daryl's with us from Wisconsin.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, Daryl. Go ahead, please.
Hi, how you guys doing?
All right.
Excellent show. I had a question of, do you guys know how many people were actually doing the complaining to the FCC? I mean, when they started their rant the last time around where they made some major changes, it turned out to be only like 19 people making several thousand complaints.
David, you mentioned some of these organized complaints. Is that the bulk of it, or is it other people just writing in?
You know, there had been some studies done by groups that were, shall we say, skeptical of certain kinds of FCC limitations on what could be broadcast. And their survey seemed to suggest that a lot of it had been organized by conservative groups. But there certainly are many thousands of them had been deluged because of activist groups. There certainly are also individuals across the country.
NPR's media correspondent David Folkenflik joined us here in Studio 3A. We've been talking about incidents at Comedy Central involving South Park and at the WB, where scenes were cut for fear of offending the FCC and prompting fines. David, thanks very much for being with us.
You bet.
In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.